town flushing, signs in Korean and Chinese, parked cars squeezed tightly together, piles of black garbage bags awaiting pickup. Instead, he saw a mirror image of the room he was standing in. "It's the same magic as the bedroom door," Alex said. "If I climb through the window, I'll just end up back where I started from." "How can I escape from a place that has no exits?" Feeling somewhat dispirited, he explored the rest of the apartment, the cat his second shadow. The floor plan was identical to his own home, so he knew exactly what to expect. A dining area barely large enough to fit table and chairs, a washer and dryer unit tucked into an alcove, and three additional closets, pantry, linens, coats. In the small kitchen, two peanut butter sandwiches and a glass of milk waited on the counter. Alex had no idea if they were meant for him or not, but he hadn't eaten for nearly 2 days and gobbled them down. Compared to the living room, the rest of the apartment was surprisingly ordinary. Two of the closets had crescent-shaped keyholes in addition to the ordinary ones, but other than that, Alex didn't come across anything else with a magical vibe. There was one thing that gave him the creeps, however. In the dining room, an antique china cabinet displayed a collection of brightly painted figurines. They were all children engaged in some manner of play. A girl skipping rope. A boy catching a butterfly with a net. A dozen more, tossing a ball, splashing in a pond, reading on a park bench. Alex was staring at the painfully wide smile of a little girl riding a sled when he heard a scratching noise to his left. He spun around and looked through the archway that separated the dining and living rooms. Someone was unlocking the coat closet from the inside. "Impossible," Alex thought. "I just checked that closet like 5 minutes ago. There was no one there. It wasn't even locked." The key scratched again. It wasn't a metallic sound like a normal key would make, more like chalk clicking against a blackboard. It seemed to be coming from the crescent-shaped keyhole. "It's Natasha," Alex thought, preparing himself. "Does she know I've been snooping around her apartment? Is she going to punish me?" The door swung open. 5. The Other Prisoner. The girl who stepped into the living room looked as though she had risen from the grave. Dirt matted her hands and face. Stains splattered her brown apron. Dark goggles concealed her eyes. Alex, whose nerves were already at their breaking point, did what anyone else would have done in that situation. He screamed.
"What?"
the girl asked, looking behind her for the cause of Alex's terror, as though something far more horrible had followed her through the closet door.
"What is it?"
She removed her goggles. Instead of the red, demonic orbs that Alex had been expecting, her eyes were big and brown and staring at him with undisguised annoyance. Alex suddenly felt very foolish.
"Sorry," he said. "I thought you might have been, you know. I really don't. A zombie or something."
The girl mulled this over.
"Good news," she said. "I'm alive, and a vegetarian. I think you're in the clear."
The girl sighed with annoyance and brushed past him. Alex followed her into the kitchen, where she filled a glass with water at the sink and downed the entire thing.
"I was supposed to show you around this morning,"
she finally said in the bitter tone of a teacher who hated her job.
"That's why Natasha unlocked your door. But you were in a majorly deep slumber, and I didn't feel like dealing with a grumpy new kid, so I let you sleep."
The girl glared at him angrily, as though all of this had been Alex's fault.
"Had to start without you. Last thing I need is for Natasha to come home and see I haven't gotten all my chores done. You snore, by the way.
I know.
I could hear you through the door.
Pretty impressive.
That's not just any door, as you've probably noticed. That's a magic...
Who are you?
Alex asked, with more bite than he intended. The girl's attitude was starting to grate on his nerves.
My name's Yasmin, she said. Not Jasmine, no J, no E. People always screw it up. Drives me crazy.
I'm Alex.
I know. I went through your bag while you were snoring away, saw your name on those notebooks.
Alex reddened. Despite everything that had happened, he still didn't want anyone to read his notebooks.
You read my stories? He asked.
Chill,
Yasmin said, raising her hands in a pacifying gesture.
I didn't read them.
I tried to, but I gave up.
You have the worst handwriting I've ever seen. Like, seriously? You're the reason typing was invented.
But the books made me think of Scheherazade from all those stories my Sito used to tell me.
Who's
Scheherazade, Yasmin said.
From the Arabian Nights. She's the vizier's daughter, and she ends up getting imprisoned by this king with a habit of beheading his wives. In order to stay alive, she tells him a different story each night and stops in the middle, so he has to keep her around to find out how it ends.
She sighed at his look of incomprehension.
You must have at least heard of the stories. Sinbad the Sailor, Aladdin, Ali Baba, and the...
You're the one who came to my door yesterday, aren't you?
Alex asked, finally making the connection.
You told me that Natasha liked stories. That's probably the only reason I'm still alive. You saved my life.
Alex thought Yasmin would be happy to hear these words, but instead she flinched as though he had insulted her. Her expression, which had grown almost friendly while she talked about the Arabian Nights, hardened into its previous look of disdain.
I didn't save anything, she snapped. You're still trapped here just like me.
So you're a prisoner too?
Yasmin pulled a battered Mets hat from her back pocket and jammed it on her head.
Nah, she said. I'm here on vacation.
I thought that since you had your own key to the closet, you might be... I don't know.
The witch's apprentice, he was about to add, but then he considered the girl's gaunt frame and haunted eyes.
She's being kept here against her will, he thought, just like me.
How long have you been here? He asked softly. Long enough, she said, picking up the empty plate on the counter. I see you found the sandwiches I made.
Thank you, Alex said. I was starving.
Good thing you like peanut butter, Yasmin said. I used to, too. There's a giant jar of it underneath the kitchen sink. Some crackers and instant oatmeal, too. Help yourself, but don't overdo it. Natasha isn't great about remembering to restock. Our supplies, at least.
Yasmin opened the refrigerator door, revealing shelves that were jam-packed with expensive food.
This, along with anything in the other cabinets, is off-limits. And don't think she'll never know if I eat this one little chocolate. She'll always know. Lenore tells her everything.
Lenore?
Where is she anyway? Yasmin asked, looking around. Lenore! Stop messing around!
The orange cat suddenly appeared at Alex's feet, startling him.
It can turn itself invisible? Alex asked in disbelief.
It's a she, said Yasmin, and yes, she can vanish at will. Lenore gives Natasha a full report on our activities each day. Just assume she's in the room with you at all times. Even when you don't think she's watching, trust me, she's watching.
Alex bent down and held his hand out, palm up, waiting for Lenore to approach him. She refused to acknowledge his presence.
What are you doing? Yasmin asked.
Trying to make friends.
Lenore doesn't want to be your friend, she said. She's a witch's familiar. You know what that is?
A magical servant, Alex said. I wrote a story once about a familiar that tried to steal its master's spell book. Well, tried to write it. Couldn't figure out a good ending. He bent down again, trying to meet the cat's eyes. I like your name. Lenore, like in The Raven. He looked up at Yasmin. Natasha must be an Edgar Allan Poe fan.
He write creepy stories?
Oh, yeah.
Then I'm sure she is, Yasmin said. Listen, this is fun and all, the bonding, but I have to get you set up so I can get back to real work.
Set up doing what?
Yasmin rolled her eyes like an older sister saddled with babysitting duty.
Just follow me.
She crossed past him back into the living room. Alex had to rush to keep up. Yasmin's walk was practically a run.
The rules are pretty simple, she said, not even looking over her shoulder to see if he was following her. Don't touch anything, especially the magical-looking stuff. Don't try to escape. It won't do any good, and if Natasha finds out...
She shook her head.
It's not worth the risk.
Where is Natasha? Alex asked.
Yasmin shrugged.
Out and about, I guess. Selling her oils. She usually comes back around dinner. I cook, by the way. You clean.
Yasmin stopped at the door to the linen closet and withdrew a small ring with three white keys, like the ones Natasha had, Alex thought, getting a good look at them for the first time. They were far more complicated than normal keys. Each bit had been carved into an intricate pattern of notches and swirls. Alex reached over to touch the key pinched between Yasmin's fingers. It was cool and perfectly smooth.
Are these carved from bone?
He asked.
Yeah, Yasmin said, yanking the key away. And don't ask me where the bones came from. I don't know, and I don't want to know.
She slipped the key into the crescent-shaped keyhole. It refused to turn.
Stuck again, she muttered, shaking her head in frustration.
It was clear that she wanted to get rid of Alex as quickly as possible, and this was just another roadblock.
Why do some doors have two keyholes? Alex asked.
Well, Natasha can hardly keep the magical rooms out in the open, Yasmin said, jiggling the key back and forth. Just in case the super or someone comes poking around. So she hides them. The regular keys lead to regular places. The bone keys, on the other hand...
The key turned with a satisfying click. Yasmin pushed the door open. Alex gasped. He should have been looking at a tiny closet barely deep enough to hold an assortment of sheets, towels, and blankets. Instead... He stepped into a circular chamber that resembled the interior of a lighthouse. A narrow wooden staircase wound upward in tight spirals past hundreds of book-lined shelves, the ceiling a barely visible dot in the distance.
This can't, Alex said.
The room spun. Alex bent over and trained his eyes on the floor. The floor was real. The floor made sense.
It's some sort of trick, he murmured.
No trick, Yasmin said. Just magic.
When Alex didn't reply, she spoke again with a hint of sympathy.
Give it a minute. It's hard to get your mind around it at first, the idea that a room can be bigger than it ought to be. You're used to walls and ceilings meaning something.
Alex grappled with this wild idea, trying to hold it still. For a reason not immediately clear to him, he flashed back to something he had learned in language arts last year.
Good stories, Miss Coral had said, build their own worlds. Events that might seem crazy or unlikely in reality can make perfect sense within the right context. That's called interior logic.
Alex remembered the feeling of excitement bubbling within him as he giddily copied the words in his notebook.
Interior logic. It was like being given permission to imagine anything he wanted, as long as he built the right fence to contain it.
Same thing here, he thought, finding a way that he could make sense of all this without losing his mind. Magic rooms are impossible in the real world, but inside a witch's apartment that lures its victims with classic horror movies? Not so crazy. Interior logic, he whispered.
Alex cautiously looked up again. The room was no longer spinning, but the floor still felt as if it was rocking beneath his feet. Taking deep breaths, Alex tried to anchor himself by picking out specific details that proved he was standing in a real place. Book spines of all shapes, sizes, and colors, dust motes falling like snow, the musty smell of pages begging to be turned. Finally, the room settled into place. His disorientation changed to excitement.
It's a library!
Grinning now, Alex walked over to the nearest shelf and read some of the titles. The Empty Classroom and Other Creepy Stories, Night Dreams and Daymares, Tales to Whisper in Little Ears.
They're story collections, Alex said.
Scary stories, Yasmin said. Every book here. Alex whistled, craning his neck to take in the rows of books spiraling over his head.
How many are there? He wondered. 5,000? 10,000?
Natasha really does like stories, Alex said. You weren't kidding. She makes me pick out a new book every night and read her a bedtime story, Yasmin said with clear distaste.
Some of them are good, some not so much. Either way, Natasha always seems disappointed. I think she's read all these books already, maybe more than once. She's dying for something new.
Yasmin gave him a crooked smile.
And, ta-da, here you come, the answer to her prayers, her own personal story machine.
She nodded toward a simple wooden desk in the middle of the floor. It was empty except for a jar of pencils and a fresh pile of lined paper.
This is where you'll be working, Yasmin said. Every day from morning to night, writing as many stories as possible.
Lenore suddenly appeared on a stool in the corner, giving her a perfect vantage point of the desk. The meaning in her cold green eyes was clear, and I'll be watching you to make sure you do what Natasha wants.
This is crazy, Alex said.
Totally, Yasmin said, but do it anyway. Natasha's serious about this, Alex. You don't want to cross her. Besides, sitting in a nice comfy chair all day making up stories, it could be worse.
Alex looked at Yasmin's dirt-encrusted nails, the long scratches on her arms.
What does Natasha make you do? He asked.
Yasmin started to say something, then glanced over at Lenore, as though unsure how much she should share.
That doesn't concern you, Yasmin said.
She turned, meaning to leave, but Alex blocked her path. He lowered his voice to a soft whisper so Lenore couldn't hear him.
There has to be a way out, he said. If we work together...
Yasmin pushed him away.
Have I given you the impression that we're friends? She asked. Because we're not.
She eyed Lenore, who was watching the conversation carefully.
And we're definitely not going to try and escape.
But...
Yasmin jabbed her finger into his chest.
No but. No nothing. This is your life now. Forget your family, forget your friends. Focus on making yourself useful to Natasha.
She met his eyes, warning him.
Write your stories, Alex. Entertain her. That's the only way you'll survive.
Alex didn't love this idea. After all, his night books were what had caused all this trouble in the first place. But right now, he didn't have any other plan.
How long did telling stories work for Scheherazade? Alex asked.
1,001 nights, Yasmin replied.
That's a long time, he said. I think I'd go crazy before then.
Yasmin gave him a grim look.
Don't worry, she said. I doubt you'll last that long.
6. The Misting Room. Alex sat at the desk a long time, staring at a blank piece of paper. He figured it was safest to follow Natasha's instructions for now, but unfortunately, he couldn't think of anything to write. It didn't help that he could feel Lenore's eyes on him, watching his every move. He was used to writing in the middle of the night without a single sound to disturb him.
Could you go somewhere else? Alex finally asked, glaring at the cat. I can't concentrate with you staring at me like that.
Lenore vanished.
That doesn't help, Alex exclaimed. I know you're still there.
After a few moments, the cat reappeared on top of the desk. Alex nearly fell backward in surprise. Lenore sauntered back to her spot on the stool.
This is why people like dogs, Alex muttered.
He pulled out a pencil and started writing random sentences on the paper just to look like he was working. To be honest, Lenore wasn't the only reason he couldn't concentrate. Unanswered questions pulled his mind in all directions.
Can I trust Yasmin? Is there a way out of this apartment? What's that sound behind the walls? And why was Natasha so interested in it? Am I ever going to see my family again?
Then there were the books. Like all writers, Alex was, first and foremost, a reader, and it was impossible to focus on his own story when so many other ones lay within easy reach. His gaze strayed to the tantalizing volumes winding along the spiral staircase, a thousand worlds begging to be explored.
I'll pick a book at random and read a single story, Alex finally decided, just to get it out of my system.
The moment he approached the staircase, however, Lenore leaped off her stool and blocked his path. She didn't hiss, but there was no mistaking the threat in her eyes. Stop wasting time, she seemed to say. Do your work. Alex thought about testing her. She was just a cat, after all. But then he remembered the long scratches on Yasmin's arms and decided to return to his seat.
No sense being reckless, he thought. Not until I have a better idea what's going on here.
He was starting to get hungry again, but he figured he should at least get a few words down before eating, just in case Natasha came home and checked his progress. He pulled out a fresh sheet of paper and hunched over it, pencil in hand.
What should I write about? He thought. Monsters? Ghosts? School?
As hard as he tried, the ideas refused to come. After another fruitless hour, the grumbling in his stomach proved impossible to ignore. Alex rose from his seat. Lenore looked up, annoyed by the disturbance.
I'm just getting something to eat, Alex said. That okay with you?
The cat stretched languorously in response, then dropped to the floor with surprising grace and waited for Alex to lead the way. He passed through the closet door, feeling a sense of relief upon returning to the apartment, like that first footstep on solid ground after a long boat ride, and entered the kitchen. As Yasmin had promised, there wasn't much of a selection in the cabinet beneath the kitchen sink, just bread, stale crackers, a few cans of tuna fish, and a jar of store-brand peanut butter. After digging behind some cleaning supplies, however, Alex discovered a half-filled box of Fruit Loops only slightly past its expiration date.
Look at this, he exclaimed, showing the box to the uninterested cat. My favorite! If it was Cap'n Crunch or Grape Nuts, I might have given up all hope, but this makes me think that everything might end up okay.
He popped a handful of Fruit Loops into his mouth. They were stale, but delicious.
You want some?
Alex placed a few Fruit Loops in his open palm and held his hand out to Lenore. She sniffed the multicolored rings cautiously.
"Go ahead," he said. "You'll like them. Everyone does."
Lenore bent forward, opening her mouth the slightest bit. Then she backed away, fixing Alex with a look of distrust.
"Your loss,"
Alex said, returning the Fruit Loops to their hiding spot like buried treasure. He returned to his bedroom and pulled a notebook from his backpack.
"I'm not going to finish a new story by tonight," he told Lenore, "so I might as well pick one that I've already written. That okay with you?"
Lenore didn't seem thrilled by this change of plans, but she didn't do anything to stop him either. As Alex settled into the antique love seat in the living room, she vanished as a mild form of protest. He held the notebook in front of his face and pretended to search for a story. His true attention, however, was focused just above the book, on the wall directly across from him. It was the place where the front door should have been. Alex hadn't exactly lied to Lenore. He really did want to pick out a good story. In fact, there was a part of him that was even looking forward to sharing his writing with Natasha tonight. But that wasn't the main purpose of his plan. Mostly, he wanted to see what happened when Natasha re-entered the apartment. Despite Yasmin's warning, Alex was still set on escaping, and he needed a better understanding of how the only exit from the apartment worked. He watched. He waited. Finally, Natasha came home. The transformation was simple. One moment, there was a wall, and the next moment, there was a door. Natasha opened it and stepped across the threshold. Her hair and clothes were soaking wet. Alex heard no rain or thunder through the windows of the apartment, but it must have been pouring outside.
"Girl!" Natasha screamed. "Girl, get me some towels, now!"
She shook her head, and water flew everywhere.
"Knew I should have brought an umbrella, but I hate lugging those things everywhere I go."
She sat down and tried to pull off a single boot. It made a big sucking sound, like a shoe embedded in mud, but refused to budge.
"Girl!" she screamed, her face growing red. "Where are you?"
Alex realized two things at the same time. One, Natasha hadn't noticed that he was sitting there. Two, she had left the front door wide open. Alex heard his brother's voice in his head,
"Move, freakazoid!"
and barreled toward freedom. He caught a glimpse of Natasha digging one finger into her ear, looking remarkably unconcerned by his escape attempt, and then he leaped forward and slammed straight into a wall where the door had been. Natasha, now digging in her other ear, gave Alex a dismissive glance as he slid to the ground.
"Girl!" she screamed. "Where are those towels?"
Dinner, for Natasha at least, was chicken medallions sautéed in garlic sauce, corn on the cob, and mounds of mashed potatoes with gravy. Alex's stomach grumbled watching her eat it all, but he didn't say a word, just stood in the corner and occasionally refilled her glass with fresh lemonade when beckoned. After his failed attempt to pass through the front door, Alex figured that he should take a wait-and-see approach before hatching any new escape plans. While Natasha ate dessert, a homemade brownie topped with vanilla ice cream and hot fudge, Alex cleared the table and washed the dishes. By the time he entered the living room, Natasha was waiting for him. She sat in a huge chair of luxurious black leather, its wooden frame spiraling upward into three tall spires. Alex thought it looked like the chair of an evil queen too poor to afford a proper throne.
"It's about time," Natasha said. She gestured toward a far humbler chair to her right. "Sit."
Alex lowered himself onto the chair. Yasmin was sitting on the antique love seat directly across from him. She looked meekly down at her lap.
In Natasha's presence, she was a completely different girl from the one he had met earlier. Alex picked up the notebook he had left on the side table and prepared to read.
Wait! Natasha snapped. Do I look ready to you? I haven't even set up my misting room yet.
I don't know what that is.
And whose fault is that?
Alex bit back a snarky response. No good can come of making her mad, he thought. Instead, he waited patiently while Natasha traced her finger through the air like someone scanning book spines for a specific title. What the heck is she doing? He wondered. After searching a bit longer, Natasha squeezed her thumb and index finger together and drew her hand down as though unzipping the very air itself. There was a tiny hissing noise like a leaking tire, and Natasha reached into what seemed to be an invisible pocket, her arm vanishing up to the elbow. She noticed Alex's astonished expression and grinned with pleasure.
This is some kind of spell, ain't it? She asked. You know any other witch that can do magic like this?
I don't know any other witches.
Well, they can't!
Natasha screeched, digging deeper into the invisible hole.
You should consider yourself very lucky.
She withdrew her arm. There was a red cylinder in her hand. It had a tiny hole at the top and two buttons on the side. What's that? Alex asked.
An oil diffuser,
Natasha said, setting it on the stand next to her.
Oh,
Alex said, disappointed. He wondered why Natasha would bother to hide such a common machine. My mom has one of those. She uses it to make our living room smell nice when we have visitors.
This one's a little different, Natasha said.
She reached into her pocket and produced a glass vial filled with blue liquid that swirled like a miniature storm. What's that? Alex asked.
Hey, storyteller,
Natasha said. She poured the vial into the hole at the top of the diffuser.
Do you know what happens to children who ask too many questions?
Alex shook his head.
Me either, Natasha said. Because no one ever hears from them again.
She threw her head back and cackled loudly. It was terrifying. The goose flesh rising from Alex's skin was evidence enough of that, but also a bit affected, as though Natasha had watched The Wizard of Oz one time too many and practiced her cackle in the mirror. Suddenly, he felt an iron grip around his wrist.
I have a bone to pick with you, storyteller, Natasha said, her fingers digging into his flesh. I thought I had been perfectly hospitable, yet you tried to escape the first chance you got. That's not very polite, is it?
Alex's stomach clenched. Here it comes, he thought, closing his eyes. Some kind of horrific spell. Natasha released his wrist.
I'll let it pass this time, she said, on the understanding that you've gotten such nonsense out of your system. There'll be consequences if it happens again. You understand? Say yes, Natasha.
Alex hesitated as long as he dared.
Yes, Natasha,
he said, his cheeks flushed with anger.
Good,
she said. Natasha pressed the bottom button on the oil diffuser, and the machine hummed to life. At first, Alex thought that nothing had happened, but then he saw the way that the air shimmered in front of him and reached out a hand. His fingers touched a solid, invisible wall.
Four walls, Natasha said. She pointed up. And a ceiling, of course. My misting room.
She pressed the top button on the oil diffuser, and blue mist issued from the tiny hole, taking the shape of the invisible room. Alex thought of a fish tank filled with blue-tinged air instead of water. Natasha inhaled deeply.
What is that stuff? Alex wondered. I see you've got a rebellious streak to you, she said,
the walls of the misting room muffling her words the slightest bit. Yasmin here did as well, but now she and I have come to an understanding. She knows better than to even think about crossing me. Isn't that right, Yasmin?
Yes, Natasha, the girl said without hesitation.
Natasha turned to him and smiled. Alex thought it was how a cobra might smile if equipped with lips and two full rows of teeth.
You'll feel the same, in time, she said, though I have to confess that I am a little disappointed. I thought you might like it here from the start. After all, haven't I given you exactly what you most desire?
What are you talking about? Alex asked. Natasha laughed at his confused expression.
Come now, storyteller, she said. You can lie to me, but don't lie to yourself. I watched you carefully while you were reading your story last night. You loved having an appreciative audience. I could see it on your face. You didn't look like a boy who had lost his freedom. You looked like a boy who had found it.
All I want to do is go home, Alex said.
I'm sure you do, Natasha said. And yet, I bet there's a part of you that's been looking forward to telling me a story all day. You probably already picked one out, didn't you?
Alex wanted to deny it, but he could tell from Natasha's smug smile that the truth was written on his face.
So what? He asked. I wanted to make sure you liked it.
Because you enjoy the attention, like I said.
My guess is that you never share these wonderful nightmares you've set to paper. Are you afraid of what people might think? A young boy with such a hideous imagination.
You don't know anything about me, he said, his face burning.
Then teach me, Natasha said. Let's start with something simple. Why did you sneak out in the middle of the night to destroy your night books?
I don't want to talk about that, Alex said.
The witch nodded. What you want doesn't really matter, and waited for him to answer.
She drummed her long-nailed fingers on the arm of the chair.
It's not important, he said.
Click, 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 click.
Why do you even care?
Click, 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 click.
Alex could see that Natasha was starting to lose patience. He didn't want to tell her everything, but staying completely silent was not an option. There would be consequences.
Tell her the truth, he thought, just not the whole truth.
I wanted to be normal, he said. I didn't want to be Alex Mosher anymore, that fat, geeky kid who knows how to make fake blood and can name all the actors who played Michael Myers in the Halloween movies. I wanted to fit in, be like other kids, and I thought that destroying my nightbooks would be a step in the right direction. I spent so much time on those stories. I love them with all my heart. I didn't want to destroy them. I needed to. That was the only way I could prove to myself that I was serious about changing.
Alex glanced in Yasmin's direction and saw her staring at him with a thoughtful expression. As soon as their eyes met, she looked away.
Alex, 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 Natasha said. Destroying a few notebooks isn't going to change what you are. You have darkness running through your veins, just like me.
She settled back in her seat and took a deep breath of the blue mist.
Now, spin me a tale, she said. And this time, make it scary.
Mr. Boots. Mr. Boots was a white teddy bear with little red boots. Tom brought him everywhere. He pushed Mr. Boots on the swing in his backyard. He held Mr. Boots close during the scary parts of his TV shows. At night, when he was supposed to be sleeping, Tom whispered in Mr. Boots's ear. Sometimes, Mr. Boots whispered back. Years passed.
Tom got older and Mr. Boots moved from his bed to his bookshelf, there were new things to play with. A basketball, an iPad, a 3DS. Then bad things started to happen. Tom went to use the iPad one day and saw that the screen was cracked. He woke up and found his 3DS drowned in a sink full of water. Each time a toy broke, Tom would find Mr. Boots on his bed instead of the bookshelf. It was like the teddy bear hoped that Tom would remember him again now that his new toy was gone. Tom started to grow suspicious. Except a teddy bear couldn't break an iPad. It couldn't fill a bathroom sink with water. That was crazy. Then, one day, Tom heard his new basketball hissing air and found a gash made with something sharp. When Mr. Boots appeared in Tom's bed the next morning, his tiny red boots were splattered with mud, as though he had been outside in the backyard, where the basketball was. Tom decided enough was enough. He threw the teddy bear in the garbage. The next morning, Mr. Boots was back in Tom's bed again. He smelled like banana peels and coffee grounds. Now, Tom was scared. He knew he couldn't tell his parents what was going on. They would never believe him. And so he waited until their family vacation. It was a sunny place so far away that they needed to take a plane to get there. Tom brought Mr. Boots, and on the last day of vacation, he buried him in the sand. This time, Mr. Boots didn't come back. After a while, Tom forgot all about the stuffed animal. He figured it had just been his imagination. Eventually, he moved away from home and went to college. There, he met a girl. They got married and had a son named Oliver. One snowy night, Tom woke up because he thought he heard whispering from Oliver's room. Giggles. Tom didn't think much of it. Oliver was an imaginative child, just as he had been. Tom went back to sleep. The next morning, Oliver was gone. Tom and his wife searched the house, but he was nowhere to be found. Finally, they went outside. In the freshly fallen snow, they could see their son's footprints leading into the nearby woods. Next to them were a set of far smaller footprints, the kind made with little red boots. They never saw Oliver again. They sat in silence until the blue mist came to a sputtering stop. Natasha breathed in the last of it. The walls of the misting room vanished on their own, leaving behind the strangely sweet smell of gingerbread cookies.
"I like the ending of that one," Natasha said. "It's so hopeless."
Thanks. You write that whole thing today?"
Alex started to nod. He wanted Natasha to think that he was working hard, but then stopped himself. He had thought of an idea.
"If I phrase this just right, maybe I can get the library all to myself."
"Actually, I wrote that story last year," Alex said. "I meant to read you a new one tonight, something really special, but I couldn't write a single word all day."
Natasha straightened in her seat.
"Why not?" she asked. "Isn't my library good enough for you?"
"It's beautiful, a perfect place to write."
Alex hesitated, as though reluctant to tattle on a friend.
"It's just... you know what, it doesn't matter."
"Out with it!" Natasha exclaimed. "What's the problem?"
Alex blew out a breath, as though Natasha had convinced him to share something that he was planning to keep to himself.
"It's really hard to concentrate with someone staring at me," he said. "I can't write anything at all."
Natasha leaned forward in her seat and pointed a single finger at Yasmin. The girl shook her head, too terrified to speak.
"I told you specifically to show the boy the library and then get out of his way!"
"Not Yasmin," Alex exclaimed. "She's been very helpful. Seriously, there's no reason to get mad at her. I was talking about Lenore.
Natasha lowered her finger. Yasmin relaxed and glanced at Alex with the slightest hint of gratitude.
Ah, said Natasha, chuckling. Let's see what we can do about that.
Get over here, you mangy beast!
Lenore appeared at the witch's feet. She was already cringing, as though some kind of punishment was a foregone conclusion.
It's really okay, Alex said, suddenly afraid for the orange cat. Honestly, I hardly know she's there at...
The witch raised her hand, and Lenore rocketed into the air, her long tail extended straight toward the ceiling, as though it were being yanked by an invisible hand. The cat thrashed wildly, hissing in pain.
"Why were you disturbing our storyteller?"
Natasha asked when the cat had risen to eye level.
"It's very important that he write those stories. Very important. You understand me?"
"It wasn't her fault," Alex said. "Stop hurting her!"
Natasha snapped her fingers and Lenore plummeted to the ground. She managed to land on all four paws and ran out of the room.
That old beast won't bother you anymore, Natasha said. Now you can write until your hand falls off.
She held his gaze and smiled without warmth.
No more excuses, storyteller.
7. The Girl Who Followed a Unicorn. Alex woke up early the next morning. He found some clean clothes about his own size hanging in the closet and knocked on Yasmin's door. No one answered. Alex figured that she had already passed through the coat closet door and started her work for the day. What is Natasha making her do? Alex wondered, remembering the scratches along Yasmin's arms, her dirt-stained face. Something messy for sure. Digging holes? Burying the bodies of Natasha's victims? The girl was so confusing. She seemed set on disliking him, but if she hadn't helped Alex that first night, he'd probably be dead. She's not bad, like Natasha, Alex thought. She's just scared. Like me. He went into the kitchen to grab some breakfast and saw Lenore lying on the counter. She looked away, refusing to acknowledge his presence.
Sorry about yesterday, Alex said. I just wanted the library to myself. If I had known that Natasha was going to hurt you, I wouldn't have said anything.
Lenore didn't open her eyes. Does she even understand what I'm saying? He knew that Lenore could somehow communicate with Natasha, but maybe that was a witch thing. Just because she can turn herself invisible doesn't mean she understands English. Still, he wanted to make it up to her somehow, and since a verbal apology wasn't doing the trick, he grabbed a handful of Fruit Loops and spread them on the counter next to her.
Here, he said, maybe this will make you feel...
Lenore opened her eyes and hissed. Alex saw claws beginning to extend from her paw and jerked his hand backward, but he wasn't nearly fast enough. An orange streak blurred in his direction. Instead of the expected pain, however, Alex felt only a weak patter against his chest. He looked down in confusion and saw Fruit Loops falling to the floor. Lenore had thrown them. Alex examined her paw more carefully and saw that what he had at first mistaken for claws were actually four tiny fingers and a thumb covered by a thin layer of black fur. As he watched, these fingers quickly retracted into her paw.
"You're just full of surprises, aren't you?" Alex asked, stunned.
Lenore gave a long, toothy yawn and turned her back to him completely. Alex retrieved his newest notebook, the only one with any blank pages left, then used the bone key that Yasmin had left on the dining room table to enter the library. He spread the notebook across the desk and laid a pencil next to it. There, he said, taking stock. That looks convincing. Alex had no intention of actually trying to write a story, but now if Natasha entered the library unannounced, he could at least look like he had been working. For the time being, he would just claim that his old stories were actually new ones. I haven't written many in this notebook yet, Alex thought, but there has to be over 50 stories between the two older ones. If all I'm doing is reading one story a night, I have plenty of time. Right now, it's more important to learn as much about the apartment as possible so I can figure out a way to escape. Alex had always relied on books to be his teachers. Hoping that things would be no different here, he set out to explore the library. Yasmin said these were all story collections, he thought. But what if she was wrong? What if there's something here that I can use? He scanned the titles. The Black Horseshoe and Other Tales of Equine Horror. Stories Scratched Beneath a Coffin Lid. 13 Dead Ends. Alex would have loved to read them all, but other than entertainment value, he didn't think they would be of much use. Then again, what exactly was he looking for? A spell book could be helpful, he thought, or even better, one of those fake books that unlocks a secret passageway leading out of this place. Alex didn't see anything like that. All he saw were storybooks. As he made his way up the winding staircase, the books grew older, the dust jackets giving way to leather bindings cracked with age. English faded from the spines, gradually replaced by what Alex thought was German. Der Dunkel Wald, he read hesitantly, tripping over the foreign words. Das Buch der Verlornen Kinder. With no other way to tell what kind of books these were, Alex flipped through one at random, his gaze lingering on several woodcuts, a beautiful woman sleeping in a casket made of glass, a grotesque imp dancing in delight around a campfire, an old crone leading a boy and girl into a house made of candy. Fairy tales, Alex thought, closing the book. The original scary stories. By the time he finally reached the top of the tower, Alex was panting from exertion. He stretched his hand into the air and grazed the stone ceiling with the tips of his fingers. It was as solid as expected. Alex hadn't really believed that there would be an exit at the top of the staircase, but he was disappointed nevertheless. Now what? He asked. The titles were clearly a dead end, yet Alex, who felt that libraries possessed their own sort of magic, still believed that there was something important to be learned here. I need to search the books themselves, he thought. At the very least, I can see what type of story Natasha likes. That could be helpful if I ever do have to write some new ones. Alex quickly retraced his path, a little bit easier than going up, but not by much, and grabbed the first 5 books off the lowest shelf. There were other titles that seemed more interesting, but Alex figured the best way to perform a thorough search was to start at the beginning and methodically work his way upward. He sat down at his writing desk and tucked 4 of the books beneath his chair, where they would remain hidden if he had any unexpected visitors. Stay focused, he warned himself, knowing that once he started reading, he might get distracted and forget the main purpose of his search. Alex opened the first book. It was a volume dedicated to ghost stories. Alex tried to skim, he really did, but every so often, a turn of phrase would bait his eye, and he would forget himself for several pages before breaking through the surface again and remembering his task. The next book, a collection of poorly written urban legends, wasn't nearly as interesting. Alex was able to give it a cursory examination in less than 10 minutes. He set it at the bottom of the pile and placed the third book on the table, a quartet of creepy novellas titled Handprints on the Window. It was long, really long. Alex braced himself with a single elbow and flipped through the pages, for the first time feeling the enormity of his task. "Am I wasting my time with this?" he wondered. "Maybe I should pull each book off the shelf and check to see if there's something behind them." Lost in his doubts, it took Alex an extra beat to realize that there was something different about this book. When he finally saw it, he had to flip back a couple of pages to where the change first began. There was writing in the margins. Words huddled together in small groups. They had been printed with a pencil. Here and there, Alex could even see erasure marks where the writer had made a correction. The penmanship wasn't the neatest, but it was legible enough. "It looks like it was written by a kid," Alex thought. "Maybe someone my age." He started to read.
"Shh! I told the witch that I'm in here picking tonight's story for her, but I want to write some things down first. I don't have any paper, so I'm going to use these books. Different book each time, so the witch don't find out. If she does, I'll be in big trouble."
Raymond was awoken in the middle of the night by scratching noises on the other side of his bedroom ceiling. He lay in bed and listened carefully. Something scampered from one side of the ceiling to the other, a trail of sound.
"How I got here was I was playing in the park, and I saw a unicorn walk into this apartment building."
"Mouse," Raymond muttered in disgust. He had lived alone in the old farmhouse for over 60 years, and it wasn't the first time a rodent had tried to use his attic for a winter home. "Well, I'm up now," he thought. "Might as well get some traps up there before I have an infestation on my hands."
"I know unicorns aren't real. I'm not stupid."
He dressed quickly and started a pot of coffee. The scratching noise continued, louder than before. Raymond reassessed his earlier opinion. Could be a squirrel, he thought. Maybe even a raccoon. He pulled down the attic stairs and climbed them carefully, his arthritic knees barking in protest.
"But I have always loved, loved, loved unicorns, so I followed it anyway, just in case. It went into the elevator, which is funny, and I took the stairs and saw it walk into this apartment. I knocked on the door, and the witch who lives here trapped me inside. And so here I am."
Sunrise was still a few hours away, and the attic was cold and dark.
"I know Mom and Dad will find me very soon. I just have to do what the witch tells me to do. She won't hurt me. I am a good girl."
Raymond ducked his head beneath the low ceiling and shone a flashlight to the left and right, where the spaces between the joists remained exposed. He was looking for rips in the insulation, some kind of sign that he had an unwelcome guest.
"She is mean, I know, but I think she is lonely too. Otherwise, why does she want someone to read her a story every night?"
Instead, he found a strange lump about the size of a softball.
"Plus, she can do magic, which I think is so cool."
"What is that?" he asked. Raymond slowly got to his knees and parted the fiberglass insulation with his shirt sleeves, revealing a silver oval-shaped object speckled with red dots. An egg, Raymond thought, struggling to come to terms with the sheer strangeness of it. "Some kind of bird get in here, maybe?" He swung his flashlight over the rest of the insulation and saw similar lumps evenly spaced throughout the attic. A dozen, maybe two.
"Also, her cat can turn invisible."
The silver egg shook. Raymond fell backward in surprise, his hand connecting with something warm and slimy on the floor. It slithered between his fingers and underneath the sleeve of his shirt, moving fast.
"And also, I think there were other kids here, but they are not here anymore, so the witch must have let them go. If I am a good girl, she will..."
The writing stopped in mid-sentence. Alex could imagine the girl hearing footsteps in the distance and slipping the book back onto the shelf. He flipped through the rest of the pages, but there was nothing more. Alex stared down at the book, trying to process all that he had learned. A sheen